Bye Bye Mr. Manager Guy. This week, Edmonton City Manager Andre Korbold has resigned.
We'll dive into what happened and why it will matter.
Hi, I'm Troy.
I'm Stephanie.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.
Welcome back to Speaking Municipally, episode 257. If on the top you figured Bye Bye Mr. Manager Guy really leads itself well to doing a parody of Don McLean's American Pie and doing a whole cringy lyric parody replacement, yep, I wrote it. It's in the bin. It's burned. It's never going to see the light of the day. I asked trusted advisors, should I do this? And they said, did you not learn from Sohee's Hamilton parody? Stop what you're doing. So that is what you are missing out. But what you're not missing out on is Stephanie's back. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how's it going?
Very good. Mac is off gallivanting around on vacation with his family and littles. The thing that we have to cover first is the big news. We decided you were hosting late last week, about 4 or 5 hours after the decision was finalized. Something happened at the city of Edmonton. Pretty big news.
Yeah, I was looking. There was no city council meetings this week. I was like, oh, it's going to be so chill. There's like nothing going on. Maybe we'll, I don't know, talk about bike lanes. But no, mid-evening on Friday, it was announced that Andre Korbold is leaving his position.
This, of course, is very big news. Andre Korbold is the city manager. He's been city manager since Adam Laughlin's conclusion of his tenure as the interim city manager during the COVID pandemic. I think it's fair to say that it was a precipitous and strained relationship with council, and it has been marred by a lot of upheaval at the top. So I think the best way to start is let's dig into sort of how this happened, because the city manager leaving is never the first action. It's usually the tip of an iceberg of a cavalcade of events. And I think there's been, I'm looking at your preparation for this episode, and yeah, there's been a cavalcade of events leading up to this.
Well, it all kind of started back on March 31st, 2023, when Deputy City Managers Katrin Owen and Kim Armstrong, they left their positions. And then since then, another three that year left. So the city auditor and then two other deputy city managers left their positions. And then we also had the former interim city manager, Adam Laughlin, that you just mentioned. He left his position earlier this year. So there's been a ton of, you know, high ranking executives leaving the city. And now there's only a couple left. Yeah, it definitely had some people wondering what is going on at City Hall. And now we have the city manager, the top dog, leaving his position. And the city nor Andre Korbold has said whether it was his decision or council's decision. Some sources acquired by Lauren Boothby at Post Media say that it was Andre Korbold's decision to quit. But of course, you know, that's not coming from his mouth himself.
I would speculate that this was a very much you can't fire me, I quit type energy. According to Lauren's sources in that article, which was some excellent reporting, the bulk of council's in-private meeting that we assumed to be about labor negotiations were probably about labor negotiations, but in the context of Andre Korbold and staying in his role. Mac and I have been talking for years about council's strained relationship with the city manager and how the city manager tended to undermine council. And we've always discussed it in the frame of they don't have the votes yet. And it's possible they still don't have the votes to dismiss the city manager, but I imagine what was happening is they were getting closer. A couple people were flipping. And as city manager, you'll know. If this is something that's going to happen, you're going to know. And it is much better to resign than to be fired.
Yeah, it's definitely been a strained relationship. What with like OP12, climate action, encampment removals, the high profile ones earlier this year, labor negotiations, budgets. It's just been, it's been strained.
I reached out to several councillors on this item asking for a comment, and shockingly, none of them wanted to provide any comment whatsoever.
No way.
I will say I have talked to some people higher up at the city off the record, and one of the things that they had provided us color commentary for the labor negotiation when council had released the letter, you know, saying the negotiation is going great, we had a great offer. One of the things that they said about that letter was that council was put in a really uncomfortable position because if they don't defend the city manager, it's sort of like bad faith negotiating, right? It mm-hmm. gives the union the ability to go around the negotiators. It kind of undermines the bargaining table. But, you know, council may not actually be happy with the city manager's performance. So it is very interesting to see a letter come out saying basically we have full faith in the city manager. And then mere days later, the city manager dismissed or resigned. I think a lot goes unsaid and read between the lines there. This does give city council a pretty unique opportunity to have a completely fresh start. They basically have a blank slate of executive leadership. They can install whatever they want at the top.
So that is a really interesting opportunity for council, you know, halfway through or a little over halfway through their term, getting this opportunity to have this blank slate. But I also think at the same time, having a very senior employee that's been in a position for like a decade or more, that's a benefit, right? They know their job inside and out. And then having all of these like fresh faces in the jobs that might not be, you know, as ideal to have these like 7 or 8 new people learning these very high stakes jobs, it might cause some crumbling. That is something that I thought of, at least.
I have heard that at least in some departments, there's a bit of a grassroots organization around Bring Back Adam. Adam Lachlan, the interim city manager who led through the COVID pandemic, was very well liked by both members of administration and council. I will say Adam did a very competent job. He never inspired, you know, innovation. And, you know, I like to make fun of Adam Lachlan's defense of the 102 Ave bike lane, such as it is. You know, this is the perfect implementation. We can take no notes, but it did get done. It was a 10-year project that did get done, and it did get done pretty effectively. And that mostly describes Adam Lachlan to a T. He did do council's direction, and he did lead the city pretty effectively in a way that employees tended to enjoy. I wouldn't be shocked if his name was put forward in consideration for the city manager position, specifically because what you said, institutional knowledge is extremely valuable. And Andre is still in the position until April 3rd. But after that point, we will have a different individual with some institutional knowledge taking the role. This is not something that I expected, but Eddie Robar will be moving into the position next.
Yeah, Eddie Robar, he will be appointed acting city manager until an interim city manager is chosen. And then the search for a permanent one will follow that. He was the ETS branch manager from 2016 to 2021. And then he was the fleet and facility services branch manager from 2021 till now. Now, I don't have like a super deep institutional knowledge of City Hall like you do, Troy, as you are the TMZ of Edmonton City Hall. So tell me why you are so surprised to hear about this person being appointed acting city manager.
Absolutely nothing against Eddie Robar. Eddie Robar has been a really effective branch manager for ETS before Kerry Houghton McDonald's term. He's now fleet and facility services manager. He's a competent individual. I think he is very passionate about public service, you know, does a good job. You know, he just sort of moved up in these roles. He hasn't been at a high level of deputy city management for a sufficient period of time. It feels a lot like in Designated Survivor, where it's like the Secretary of Agriculture becomes president because everyone else on the list of succession has departed or died. I think if you asked Eddie Robar, do you think you're going to be city manager next year? He would have said no. That wasn't in his immediate career plans. He'll steward it effectively. An acting city manager is basically, you know, just holding down the fort. It will be interesting to see who they choose as an interim city manager going forward from there, though.
Yeah, because they have so few like top level executives left. And then who's going to replace that person when they're interim city manager?
Of course, I'm going to put my conspiracy theory hat on this. When I thought about doing this episode about Andre, really, we have no information about Andre's departure. So it is basically all speculation. And that allows us free form, the ability to basically freewheel speculate. And one of the other speculations that may explain Andre's tenure is, I think back to Reddit, as an example, did this during a transition period where you hire a CEO, have them make exhaustively unpopular decisions, and then fire the CEO, but keep the unpopular decisions. And you have now washed your hands of the blame for the decisions, but the decisions are still there. I mean, if city council wanted to clean house of the upper brass, Andre did that. Now, we don't know whether Andre was the cause of all of these departures. Everyone was very cordial and very professional in their departures, saying, oh, it's for other adventures, or I've done my time at the City of Edmonton, and I'm ready to move on. But there has always been the specter of it's they're either leaving because they were dismissed or because they didn't like Andre's management style. Either way, they're gone. And so too is Andre. And now what this leaves on the table is a very tenuous question of what happens with OP-12, which was basically due this spring. And, you know, people watching closely seemed to think it wasn't really going to deliver on the promise. Now, the chief in charge of delivering OP-12 is gone. This might put council in a very difficult budgetary position. And this budgetary position is in confluence with something that happened provincially that was broken by a David Staples column, of all places. I'm reticent to get my news from a David Staples column, but this is the only source for that information. And that is, allegedly, the province might be looking at a move to, quote unquote, stabilize and audit the city of Edmonton.
Yeah, he is reporting that senior officials with the province say that they're alarmed by what it's hearing out of the city of Edmonton and that they're ready to step in to stabilize it. And it brought up the examples of the top staff leaving and then also the financial position that the city sees itself in.
And of course, there's a lot of politics to be derived from all of this. When we had talked with Jeremy Appel, the specter of city parties is hanging over all of our heads. But I thought what was really interesting with this response was Aaron Rutherford taking the forefront and really slamming it down right off the bat.
Yeah, she says this is pure and utter undermining of this council to prep for the next election. And she says, I guarantee they would start this investigation before the election, but it wouldn't conclude until after, and they would find nothing because it's been a challenging, like, pandemic recovery time. She also said something interesting. As a previous city employee, I can clearly say there needed to be changes at the top. While that might not be true for all departures, it is for a bulk of them. Which I thought was an interesting thing for her to say. She's not too pleased with hearing about this audit.
It is notable that despite Danielle Smith saying the city is in free fall because they've lost their city manager, this is not an abnormal thing. No council in recent memory has had a single city manager. It all goes back to the firing of Simon Farbrother after the Metroline fiasco, in which case we had an interim city manager, and then Linda Cochran as our city manager. She retired. We had Adam Lachlan, and then we had Andre Corbald. But, you know, in just 10 or so years, we've had four city managers, a five if you count Eddie Robar, who's stepping in right now. City managers come and go. I don't know if this is as catastrophic an issue as the premier might lead us to believe.
It makes you wonder if Danielle Smith might have an issue with Edmonton or its city council. It makes you think.
It really does, doesn't it?
Well, I know that some reporters asked the premier why she's considering stepping in Edmonton, but not in Medicine Hat. If you don't know, in Medicine Hat, the mayor got stripped of her, don't quote me on this, but she got stripped of her salary and like a lot of her power. Just go read the reporting being done down there. It's really great. But that council is also facing a lot of dysfunction and she's not offering to step in there to fix the issue in Medicine Hat. So, you know, and Medicine Hat is her riding, isn't it?
I wouldn't know because she doesn't tend to live in the ridings that she represents. Yeah. Medicine Hat, absolutely a fascinating scenario to have a mayor stripped of half her salary, her like committee rights. She's unable to talk to the city manager without every other member of council being CC'd on the email. No private meetings with staff. This is a sanction that is astronomically high. I think back to Mike Nickel in the city of Edmonton. You know, I wasn't in the room in Medicine Hat, and there's some reporting that I absolutely encourage our listeners to go read. But you know, Mike Nickel bullied city administration on the regular. I saw it in meetings. Mike Nickel was doing things that actively violated the council code of conduct, and he got off scot-free. To see this in Medicine Hat, I think really does highlight some of the dysfunction. But I think even further, it is indicative of what's to come. Municipalities now have the go-ahead from the province to bring party politics to the municipal level, to do those dogfights in the middle of council chambers. You know, you look at question period and it's vicious. It's a clown show. And we don't have that municipally, but I think we're going to get that. The managing editor at Tabloid Edmonton, Tim Quarengesser, actually wrote a pretty good story for The Walrus about a year or two back, why Alberta bullies its cities. And I think that's instructive in this regard, because we are bullying our cities. We are going to continue to bully our cities. And that is what the province has indicated. It's interesting you mentioned, though, Danielle Smith was asked about this question of auditing the city. And she basically said, no, I've offered to help, but I'm not going to do anything unless they ask.
Whoa, crazy. Has Edmonton ever asked the province for help? I can't remember if they've ever, you know, requested some funding or anything from the province.
I can't imagine. Especially, I can think of no specific asks on housing and houselessness. Not even, will I say, an emergency declared on housing and houselessness. But we did get updates on the housing and houselessness file, namely that the Navigation Center, this is the homeless reception center that Jason Nixon had established, was apparently a smashing success. Couldn't have been better.
Yeah, so Jason Nixon told reporters that more than 700 people have accessed this center since it opened, and more than 500 of them have been connected to shelter and housing programs. But Rachel Notley has said that the number of people that have been permanently housed from this program is 5. So I'm not a math whiz, but 5 out of 550.
Yeah, it's... 1% is that conversion rate. Now, of course, this is confusing because in the same breath, Jason Nixon was saying that, you know, 240 people have been directed to housing programs and 350 people have been sheltered. And, you know, many in the room questioned those numbers, saying that, are you sure? That doesn't quite make sense. He doubled down on those numbers. Far be it for me to question Jason Nixon. He has had struggles with the truth on this file before. During the winter, he was quoting numbers that all journalists were unable to verify as true by even calling around shelters or with any other aggregate statistics. So if I was to trust someone in this regard, I think the NDP statement that only 5 have been permanently housed sounds about right, because there are other indicators of housing and houselessness, and mainly one of them is the number of homeless people dying, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of getting people sheltered is to reduce death. And through all these sweeps, we haven't seen a reduction in the number of deaths.
Right. So Boyle Street Community Services, which obviously serves the vulnerable and homeless population here in Edmonton, they told CBC that in the first 78 days of 2024, they received 72 death notifications for people who were experiencing homelessness.
We obviously don't have comparator metrics, but if you consider 2023, the number of deaths in 2023 was 302 people. So slightly fewer than one per day. So you can see it definitely has not decreased and has in fact increased a little bit in 2024.
When I did a story on this center a few weeks ago, I spoke to Jim Gurnett, who's a spokesperson for the Edmonton Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. He said that people are like fighting to survive out there, getting their shelters removed every single day. It's leading to abject misery, he said, and they don't really have their like nicer tents and tarps left because they just get thrown in the garbage. They have to survive with just one blanket or one tarp. He says it is leading to worse health and mental health outcomes.
Yeah, and it was very interesting at the press conference where they were announcing the Navigation Center. Chief McPhee was asked about this, and he seemed to have skepticism about those numbers, whether a homeless person had died every day or so in 2024. And he, you know, identified that the medical examiner's office is backed up as, you know, some reasoning. And he also said that he was a little bit skeptical that there are 3,000 homeless people in Edmonton, which is numbers that have been broadly reported by social services agencies around the city of Edmonton. Of course, it is notable that the numbers that Boyle Street reported, those are given to them by EPS. EPS tells Boyle Street if someone with no fixed address has died. This is another check in the column of, it seems the people organizing and shepherding this initiative really don't have all the data, or in fact are intentionally misrepresenting the data because it doesn't support their points. And it's hard to see the support for encampment clearing as a health benefiting operation. Of course, the undercurrent in all of this, as we talk about it, is this is the primary cause, I would say, of Edmonton's quote-unquote dysfunction, as David Staples would like to call it. You know, if you think back to the decline in the conservative worldview of Edmonton, it started during the pandemic earnest when houselessness went through the roof. You had increased disorder. You had increased dirt on sidewalks downtown. You know, the decline of the downtown is very tightly coupled with the opioid crisis. It's very tightly coupled with the houselessness crisis. You think back to provincial meddling in the city of Edmonton. Tyler Chandreau had requested a public safety report from the city of Edmonton. He said, we need Edmonton to pull up its bootstraps and give us a public safety report and get a new plan within 30 days delivered to my desk. And Edmonton said, okay, and gave a plan that was basically the plan that they already had. And Tyler Chandreau was like, yeah, thumbs up. Good job, Edmonton. I see this potential audit in a lot of the same way. The province has all the information. The province knows everything. The province knows they're not going to find anything wrong with Edmonton. Just like they knew they weren't going to find Edmonton wasn't disregarding the safety of its citizens. But it is a political win to ask the question. And I think for that reason alone, Danielle Smith says she's not going to ask the question, but she's definitely going to ask the question. You know, okay, my conspiracy theory hat, it's solidly over there in the corner. We're not putting it on for the rest of the episode. I feel like we're delving into provincial politics podcast, mm-hmm. and that's not where we want to be. Let's get back to the bread and butter of City Council, and that's people in Glenora complaining. And Stephanie, you delivered this week, and people in Glenora, what did they do this week? Did they complain?
They may have complained a little bit. So back at Urban Planning Committee meeting earlier this month, Urban Planning Committee voted to stop work on the Glenora Character Heritage Area rezoning project. And instead, they're going to use the money to go towards a citywide project that would kind of seek to define what do we define as a heritage area and why. And some of the issues that the folks in Glenora brought up is that sunk cost fallacy, like we've spent all this time and energy on this and money on this. Why are we stopping now? And what the folks over in Glenora brought up is that what needs to be protected is the character area. So it can't just be individual homes, because a person isn't going to designate their home unless the whole neighborhood that they're living in looks like that, or at least the character areas. And a big part of this is trees. They want to protect the trees. And they say that if an apartment building is built, then it'll go straight to the sidewalk and the trees will not be able to live there. And the trees are a very big part of the heritage of this area. And they want similar requirements that are in the Westmount architecture area, where you have to have... I didn't know this. I just learned about this while doing this story. But if you build a house in a certain part of Westmount, you have to have a front porch, which honestly, that's a regulation I can get behind. That's like, I do love a front porch moment, but you also have to have like your windows a certain size and like a certain type of roof. And that's just what they want. They want certain regulations in place so that to protect the character of the neighborhood.
You're forwarding Glenora's comments forward. So I'm not going to say that you're being an NIMBY, but they're being an NIMBY through you. You know, the thing that we always realize is trees are often a proxy for something else. Just like how in the discussion around zoning bylaw, EV charging was a proxy for something else. Really, when we talk about Glenora, it's about keeping out the pores, right? This might not be the intention of the good people at the old Glenora Conservation Association, because I can understand living there and wanting to preserve the neighborhood as you had it. But Glenora, for better or worse, has Carruthers caveat, right? It has a legal precedent for poor people aren't allowed. You are not allowed to subdivide a lot. You are not allowed to install multifamily housing because good old Carruthers didn't want those types of people in his neighborhood, the people that couldn't afford the mansions. I am not saying that people in Glenora are like that, but when you preserve historical regulations that were put in place for ostensibly racist reasons, but at least classist reasons, you are perpetuating that. That said, you know, trees are nice, and the city has struggled with a tree protection bylaw. But what Glenora is asking for in this strikes me as extra in a way that the city shouldn't preserve. The city hasn't said, we're not going to do your heritage preservation in Glenora. They said, we want to look at this in the context of the entire city and develop an entire regulation. And that wasn't sufficient for the Old Glenora Conservation Association.
They weren't happy with that, but committee did direct administration to work with Glenora about something other than restrictive zoning. And it's not exactly what the people in the community wanted, but it's something kind of more positive to come out of this discussion while they're working on the citywide heritage strategy. So yeah, they didn't come out super happy from this, getting exactly what they wanted, but they are still going to be continuing the conversation around preserving the heritage in Glenora.
Yeah, and of course, you can actually be a part of Glenora's heritage, dear listener. Alexander Circle is the area of Glenora with that fountain. And a house at number 8 Alexander Circle is for sale for $2.5 million right now. So
pocket change.
Yeah, if you've got $2.5 million burning a hole in your pocket, talk to me before buying the house. I can put that money to better use. Don't worry about that. I would say Alexander Circle is, you know, the Glenoriest part of Glenora.
Yes.
It is what they identified as this is exactly the culture. So Urban Planning Committee passed a motion to look into this more. Did we get a sense of when we're going to next hear about this?
Yeah, we didn't really get like a super duper straight answer as like a lot of, you know, return with a report kind of things are. But administration did say that they're going to keep monitoring changes to the character of Glenora. They were saying over the past few years, there's been a lot of, I think, around a dozen homes that had heritage value but weren't actually protected. They've been demolished. So they're going to keep monitoring that sort of thing to see like if this is, you know, accelerating at all. So yeah, I can't give you any exact dates, unfortunately.
Of course, you know, debating heritage preservation and preserving single family homes in Glenora is one half of the bread and butter of City Council. The other half of the bread and butter of the City Council is ban cars. And Stephanie, we're closer to banning cars on 83rd Ave in front of the farmer's market. This is the pipe dream that I never thought would happen. And listener, once this is out tomorrow, the story should be live on Taproot Edmonton talking about the official recommendation to actually close that street to cars. This is really real.
Yeah. So in the updated draft or the most recent documents that we have describing the Old Strathcona Public Realm Strategy, this was something that I noticed as new. I'm pretty like knowledgeable about this particular subject, I think. And yeah, I was really surprised to see that the city is recommending that 83rd Avenue between Calgary Trail and Gateway Boulevards, that's from Pip to the Old Strathcona Farmers Market, if you use those landmarks, to be closed to cars. And yeah, I was super surprised and it's just such an interesting foil, I guess, to 102nd Ave downtown. Of course, we've talked about that a lot on this show. But yeah, I mean, you can't, like, those are two such different streets. If, according to the city's own policies, 83rd Ave is like the perfect choice compared to 102 Ave because there's two theaters, like 5 restaurants, a public park, a public plaza. There's already a bike lane there. There's a farmer's market. It was a very interesting recommendation coming from the city.
It's substantially exciting for anyone who is in the area. This, of course, comes with the broader recommendations on public realm around that 83rd Ave area. And we had seen previous plans and designs and theories for the area that would involve a little bit more development. And we heard through some of the consultation and through some of the drafting process that the city might actually want to pull back on some of their redevelopment and park areas with the Old Strathcona Farmers Market parking lot.
Yeah, a city planner told me that at first they were leaning more towards like more development, but now they're leaning more towards more open space because they're going to need somewhere for all of these new residents that they want to move there. They're going to need a space for them to hang out outside. So yeah, they're leaning a little bit more towards the open space, not so much of the development.
I think what's really interesting about this is, like you said, there's going to be new residents in the area because the plan north in the End of Steel Park area would be to install some residential towers. And I think there's a really interesting sort of prototypical 102 Ave type scenario where we talked about the advantages of 102 Ave being this connector between, you know, Edmonton City Hall and the new Warehouse Park and some of the new high rises on the route, along with the LRT. This farmers market area, if there's high rise construction on End of Steel Park, there's Wilbur McIntyre Park, there's the farmers market, and then there's the good old historic streetcar. We've kind of got sort of like the same setup as 102 Ave downtown, just on a much, much smaller scale with all the, you know, core density and businesses filled in. I think what's really exciting to me about this is it is obvious to anyone that looks at this street that it would work best as a public plaza. And I think that we're finally willing to talk about it and we're finally willing to really consider about it. While it's exciting just for that area, the biggest excitement is, what does Edmonton love best? It's a pilot. And we can use this as a pilot for other places in the city.
Yeah, lessons learned, you know. And they even said that they were going to pilot the closures outside of festivals and events. So we love a good pilot here. They're also going to start, or they're recommending that the city installs shared streets on several streets in the area, which is like when cars are allowed, but they're like second-rate travelers. They can't go very fast and they have to yield to pedestrians and stuff. It's way more daring in the kind of urbanism front than I was expecting from this plan. So it was really interesting to read.
Well, Stephanie, people are going to ask the only question that Edmontonians ask when something like this comes up. What about the parking? We've got an old Strathcona Farmers Market parking lot there. There was also discussions around White Ave between 99th Street and 109th Street about improving the space for pedestrians, businesses, and people walking and moving around. It seems like that might have some impacts on parking.
Yeah, so the city would remove at least some of the 225 parking spaces that are on White Avenue from 109th Street to 99th Street. But luckily for the drivers of that area, the city did a parking study. And as of April 2023, there are 3,500 parking spaces in the area, about 80% of which are free. You don't have to pay to park in them, which that number astounded me. 3,500 parking spaces.
I work remotely, but occasionally my work will get together and we'll have days together at the coffee shop. And we typically meet at Remedy on White. And thankfully, my coworkers have learned not to complain about parking with me around, but without fail, all of them will show up and they'll complain about the parking. They say, I had to walk a block and a half to get the free parking. I'm like, oh, my sweet summer child, you do live in a city. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most fascinating thing is they complain, but they parked in free parking at the peak hours of business in the most sort of like dense, active, urban place, I think, in the whole city, the White Ave area. And you know, Stephanie, now that we're giving the bad news for everyone who loves parking, some more bad news for people in 15 neighborhoods. You're about to lose your reservation for that spot in front of your house.
This was a really surprising thing to me as a city council watcher. Edmonton's Urban Planning Committee has voted to remove the residential parking permit zones for 15 neighborhoods. Anyone can park on the street parking beginning in June. And it was intended to provide more equitable access to street parking. But I don't know. I feel like this council is like a parking control freaks. You know what I mean? Like they like to. Yeah, I feel like this council really likes to control parking. So I was really surprised when they said, yeah, whatever, just whoever can park here. But I know that they're trying to encourage people to park on their property if they have like a garage or something instead and leave the public roadway that all of our tax dollars pay for. Let anyone park on them. But still, I was quite surprised to see this relinquishing of control.
I feel the same way that you feel. What's that over there in the corner? Is it my conspiracy theory hat?
Let's just go. No, take it off. No, okay. Fine. One more. That's all you get, Troy. One more conspiracy theory moment.
All I'm saying is that council has indicated their intention to manage parking as a better resource citywide. And the thing that parking permits don't allow the city to do is that. If they want to apply paid street parking, having areas that are designated as resident only and you can park in it for free, that is sort of antithetical. If I was to say the long-term play here, it is, you know, remove the resident only street parking so that, you know, everyone that pays for this public realm thing can use it to park. Specifically, a couple neighborhoods like Belgravia and Southgate that will lose this resident only parking permit. There's going to be some tragedy of the commons happening there. Those are right near some LRT stations that have had park and ride, quote unquote, problems in the past. I do expect those problems to resurface and a lot of people parking in those neighborhoods, at which point residents may complain to council and council may say, well, you know how we can manage demand for parking? paid parking, let's control it. That could be a potential end goal. The other potential end goal, of course, could be something like if you want to make these areas have more bike lanes and have more wider sidewalks and more accessible areas or parklets or other things where you want to use that public space, freeing it up from this resident control. It is much easier to use parking space that is public parking space versus parking space that you've quote unquote sold to residents in the area, that they have an expectation that they own it because it's residents mm-hmm. only. I would suspect that's the play. I will say that Councillor Ashley Salvador did speak to this. And from an equity lens, basically, you know, these neighborhoods that were chosen were kind of just chosen willy-nilly. It's like someone complained and council's like, yeah, okay, resident-only parking for your neighborhood, but not for others that may have had worse parking problems. So there is, from an equity lens, the neighborhoods that tend to have resident-only parking restrictions tend to be richer and whiter and single-familier than others that don't. So for the residents in these 15 neighborhoods, some of which include Century Park or Holyrood, Northlands, Oliver, Park Allen, or, you know, a few others, you can take your parking passes, you can take a lighter, you can light them on fire, and yes, indeed, dear listener, this is a transition into the rapid fire segment. The Old Glenora Conservation Association is raising alarm bells after the city has halted a Glenora-specific heritage preservation report in favor of developing a citywide heritage strategy. The association notes that by not doing the project with a Glenora-specific focus, the city risks relegating Glenora to secondary or non-player character status, with the prices they paid for their single-family homes in the center of the city very clearly entitling them to main character status.
Edmontonian Kurt Edward Roy has been sentenced to 18 months after being caught defrauding over $160,000 from a Millwoods preschool where he acted as treasurer. At the time of sentencing, he was working toward a project management certificate. With that certificate and fraud on his resume, when he gets out, he will be fully qualified to run a City of Edmonton recycling or composting facility.
With spring rounding the corner, Wild North has advised patrons of the River Valley and Ravine systems that skunks may be coming out and looking for a mate, so stay clear unless you want their scent stuck on you. This follows the year-round warning for White Ave area residents that if you smell something skunky, it probably also indicates a male looking for a mate, but the same advice applies. Avoid. You don't want their scent on you. Speaking Municipally is a publication of Taproot Edmonton. Of course, we want to talk to you about the Taproot Edmonton calendar. There's so much going on. Mac would be remiss if I did not highlight that ongoing right now is Edmonton Downtown Dining Week. This mm-hmm. runs from March 20th through March 31st. So this will be your last weekend to get downtown and enjoy some of those dining week deals and new meals. So get on that, dear listener.
Mm-hmm. I went to Elf Furniture Warehouse and they had it was a delicious and very, very budget friendly there. I personally,
you went to, there's a restaurant called L Furniture Warehouse?
Yeah, it's on 108 Street and Jasper Avenue. It's not, I know it sounds really funky, but it is just a chain, but It's good. It's fun. It's really budget friendly. I think it started in like Vancouver or Calgary or something. It's got a funky vibe in there. I like it there.
I imagine they probably have furniture too. Otherwise.
Yes, I did sit and eat at a table. I didn't just stand in the middle of an empty room.
Was there anything else on the event calendar that caught your eye?
I would love to go see Robot Girls. It's been getting rave reviews. I love a good play, and I love a play about young women, and it looks just really cute. So I think I will maybe check that out this weekend.
I will say that I have received no fewer than 3 independent people telling me that Robot Girls was the funniest thing they had seen all year. That ends March 31st, so mm-hmm. good reminder. I got to get going this weekend to that. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have to get going now. This is the end of the episode. We have no more episode to share with you. Thanks once again for joining me, Stephanie. We have heard rave reviews for your presence on the podcast last time. It was a treat to have you here again. And I heard that one of your goals this year at Taproot was to host 2 episodes of the podcast. So mm-hmm. gold star, you did it. Congrats.
Achieved. Yes, now I don't have to try to do anything else for the rest of the year. I can just coast.
And this is going straight on your performance review. Mounds of raises, you know, goals
yes.
achieved.
Yes. No, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. And I love this podcast and I'm very excited to be part of it. So thank you.
Well, of course, you get to say everyone's favorite line on Speaking Municipally. Until next week, I'm Troy.
I'm Stephanie.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.